Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It normally airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives. I'm Madison Watson, a junior at Ladenville High School in Mendocino County, California. On today's show, we will hear from Eve, Timothy, Talia, and myself. We will talk about social media in 2017 and global peace and local peace. We will start with Eve and Timothy discussing the various forms of social media being used by today's high school students. The main applications are Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and SoundCloud. Each format offers different opportunities and attracts different types of users. They talk about how social media changes communication patterns and how it is creating the evolution of boredom. Here are Eve and Timothy.
I'm Eve Kreiling. I'm a sophomore at Ladenville High School. Ta-da.
My name is Timothy Skaggs, and I'm a senior at Laytonville High School.
I myself am not very active on social media. I do have both a Snapchat and an Instagram, but I don't really get the functionality of it. Like, I'm not very active on it. I have, like, 9 pictures on my Instagram compared to most other teenagers, 100 and something. So not very experienced.
I have Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, and SoundCloud. Facebook, I'm very active because, well, I have a lot of people on there that I like to, you know, talk to. Instagram, I'm somewhat active. Snapchat, I'm kind of on and off with that. Like, sometimes I'll use it if I have the spare time. Sometimes I won't. SoundCloud I just use to post my music on for other people to hear.
Yeah, I think that's important to share, especially if you're making art, to share that with the people of people who want to hear it. And so you can get yourself out there. I myself, it's like, I don't have really an outlet to share on the internet, and so I don't, and I'm kind of honestly afraid to. I have an issue with sharing parts of myself to people I might not know, and that's just my personal thing with it. I mostly use Snapchat to keep in talk with my friends. We have, like, a group chat that we all use, but aside from, like, posting what I'm doing throughout the day, I'm not really experience with that. I like to watch other people, so I guess it's just like the stalker culture of our generation.
Could you explain what, you know, a lot of the people that listen to this show use very little social media, and that's part of why I want to do this show about social media. So would you explain what the Snapchat experience is, what you see, the range of things that happen, the group things, everything you can tell me about Snapchat.
Snapchat itself is to share things you do throughout the day. It's not like significant things like Instagram are that you do want to share and post to the world that have kind of an artistic element to them. It's mostly just like, oh, I'm eating a sandwich. Let me take a picture of it and show it to my friends for 24 hours.
Random stuff.
Or at least that's what I use it for. But a lot of nowadays, or at least what I'm seeing, is there is a lot of underlying issues with Snapchat. Like, people would be passive aggressive on their Snapchat stories, like purposely attacking another person for what they did in real life. But it could also do a lot of good. You can keep touching people who are way far away and constantly see their face and keep involved in their lives because they're posting it on Snapchat.
So is there always a picture?
Well, there's pictures and videos. And the thing is, you can send pictures and videos to your friends, but you can also post them on your story. And your story is a collection of things you posted on Snapchat throughout the day that goes away in 24 hours. And so what people do is they click on each other's story, they see what they're doing, and maybe they go text them about it. That's the main idea of Snapchat. But there's also, like, all these other things. There's streaks where you get a number next to someone's name if you snap them so many times in a day, or how many days in a row. And
is there a notification every time you do one of those snaps?
Yeah, you get a little drop down on your phone.
Looks
oh, blah, 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 snapped me. Let me go snap them back, you know? But as I said, there can be a lot of passive aggressiveness on Snapchat or someone putting out a saying that's meant to target one person without giving away without giving away who that person is. And if that is you, it can be kind of damaging.
So do you use Snapchat?
Yeah, but I don't, but I'm not all caught up in things like streaks and, you know, all the things that other teenagers use Snapchat for. I just use it to post random pictures or videos.
Some people are really into it. Like, they have to have their streaks every day. They have 20 plus streaks and they're Snapchatting the same picture to every 20 of those people every day, twice a day, in order to keep a little fire emoji and a number next to that person's name. It's just like the politics of Snapchat, honestly. There's no other way to like describe it. It's like a compulsion thing that some people have. And I don't know if I say I'm not lucky or I'm not just connected to my peers, but I don't particularly like that. Sorry. So yeah, I think it is easy to get too wrapped up in Snapchat and kind of lose what's going on, as well as keeping up with other people.
I totally agree, and the same thing can happen with Facebook and Instagram as well.
About 10 years ago, 12 years ago, I got on Facebook, and I thought it was really cool because, you know, I was able to communicate with the students that I work with, and it was an interesting thing creating this community, kind of virtual community that you can check in on how people that you don't really end up seeing, how they're doing. But I have found that most high school students don't use Facebook much and they don't use Messenger much. And I guess it's because of Snapchat, originally Instagram. But could you guys talk a bit about what Facebook is, how it works, and what it's done, not done for you?
Well, the way Facebook works is you can share a video, a photo, or just a random text, like post on your wall, and then your friends on Facebook will see it and they'll like it, they'll love it, or they'll think it's funny, or they'll think it's sad, or they'll be angry with it. Basically, Facebook likes are now called reactions. Also, with Facebook's new feature, you can make a live stream. Like if you're videoing someone playing an instrument or videoing, like, say, Iron Maiden concert, it'll show up on your wall and it'll be live the whole time. Also, yeah, you can send photos and videos and texts to people through Facebook Messenger. However, there are cons to using Facebook as well, because, I mean, like, there will be these really weird people, like fake people or pedophiles, who will send you a friend request. And usually if their picture is blurry or looks like it's been photoshopped, that'll indicate that it's a fake profile and just may contain something you don't want in your phone. So watch out for that kind of stuff. Also, Facebook drama. Usually that happens in the comments section. Like someone posts something political, someone doesn't agree, and all of a sudden people are arguing in the comments. It goes from a political post to petty teenage, what's the word?
Squabbles.
Yeah, that's a good word. I've found that the best way to keep out of so-called Facebook drama is, don't like the comments, don't comment, don't even like the post. Now,
but there is a contradiction there. You're not really using Facebook for interacting people. You're just kind of, again, watching what other people duke out online. And so you're not really using Facebook for its purpose if you just kind of step back. But then again, if you don't want to get into it, you don't want to get into it. I personally don't have a Facebook. I used to when I was younger, just because I liked the games. Like, I was like 11-year-old me was all about the Farmville on there. But then I just I just stopped using it. Like, none of my friends were on it. I feel like none of my friends are still on it. Like, nobody uses it. My mom is on it all the time, though. Constantly. She'll, like, pull over and check her Facebook on her phone, and I'll have to be like, Mom, we're late. And she's like, oh, sorry, and shuts it down. So, yeah, I feel like Facebook has connected more with the older generation than in the past, because it's not new anymore. It's been around for forever. People, yeah, kids want new things. They want to go over to Instagram and Snapchat. And I feel like Facebook is trying to pull those viewers back by mimicking what these new social media sites do. Now they have stories and filters, just like Snapchat did as well. Oh, same thing with Instagram. Instagram is a picture sharing platform. It's usually you have a page which has all the pictures you post up, and it's like, and you have followers and you can follow people. There's also an explore page where all the popular posts on Instagram are posted, or it's also Instagram takes photos and pictures that you think you would like and puts it on your explore page. I think it's less of a interacting with people type of social media site than of more of showing and looking and appreciating the art and the photos people are putting up. There is also a messaging platform on there, direct messaging, but me and my friends usually use that for sharing things we found on Instagram with each other, the things that we thought were funny or sad or interesting with each other. And so it's less of a, hey, you want to meet up this weekend type of text thing. It's more of a, oh, look at this. I think you'll like it, you know?
Yeah. Like, I'll use it to post, like, you know, random stuff, like random pictures that I took, selfies, sometimes dinner posts. Or I'll let my followers know if I'm coming out with a new album on SoundCloud.
I did notice you have a large amount of followers. I only have like 100 and something. You have close to 2,000. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't understand how someone...
How did you get so many?
Well, because Instagram has this thing where it'll have a suggestion for followers, kind of like the people you may know selection on Facebook. And usually people will just be like, that looks interesting. Follow. Also, I have made a lot of posts about popular bands like Iron Maiden and Led Zeppelin and Metallica. And pretty much anyone who's into the rock metal scene will follow me.
Yeah, you can also find people by, like you were saying, how if you post about, like, interesting bands, then you will get connected with other people who like those bands, often through what you call hashtags. I'm pretty sure hashtags originated on Twitter, but...
Do you guys use Twitter?
I don't have a Twitter.
I used to, but I haven't been on it.
I know people who do have a Twitter. I've tried to create one. I couldn't get into it. I found it kind of boring.
Same.
Okay, so one of the concerns that old people, have about social media is that it's changing the range of communication. It's changing how much you interact with other people in actual time versus virtual reality and the language and stuff. Not that it's, you know... foul language. It's more like not spelling things out, using shortcuts for everything, and just making kind of snappy Snapchat. And do you think that it's a problem in communicating, that it's changing the way people communicate with each other in a positive or a negative way?
Well, what you're saying about the abbreviations and the acronyms, what I have to say about that is language does evolve, but we are losing, like, the roots of it. Like, I often know, and I'm, of course, 15, and I should be connected with this stuff, but I'll see, like, an acronym on, like, someone's Snapchat post, and I have to go Google what it means, because for some reason, I can't, like, automatically know, you know? It's just kind of hard for me to... I don't know what I'm saying, but it is changing communication and language a lot because it's less about communicating with someone directly and more about getting your words out there, like especially on Snapchat and Instagram.
Turning into robots. Like, whenever someone finds something funny, they'll just say LOL out loud instead of just laughing.
I don't really have, like, much experience with that. I've never heard someone say LOL out loud. Like, really?
Yeah.
Just a few times, but yeah.
Like, I feel like it would just be awkward. Like, oh, if somebody cracks a joke, LOL.
It is kind of
like, it's
funny,
robotic,
picture.
Like you said, it could be, it can be robotic.
I've had this experience at schools where in between classes, people come out, they immediately turn on their phones, check their text, maybe Snapchat, maybe Facebook, maybe Instagram, and they'll be talking to another person as they're walking along, but they're simultaneously texting. And I mean, they're doing like three really shallow communications that simultaneously. Maybe it's great the more people communicate with each other and stay in touch. I mean, it's kind of like the age of telepathy is no longer needed because we have these devices that allow us to be connected mentally, consciously to everybody, all our friends, simultaneously. Can you talk in that direction a little bit?
It is kind of irritating when you're hanging out with your friends and they're all... Because I broke my phone a couple months ago. I didn't have a phone for a good portion of 4 months. And so whenever I was hanging out with my friends and they were all on their phones, I felt kind of left out. I felt kind of like excluded from whatever they're going with. And what I saw was... What I observed was the notion that everyone wants to be a celebrity. They don't want to communicate deeply with someone. They want to spread their word fast and quick and out there to everyone as possible. Same with the streaks thing. They send the same message over and over again to 25 people and not really getting the same reply back, or people will do it back to them. It's very shallow communication, as you said. And so you're not really connecting deeply with someone. You're just kind of laying a film of your words over a population.
I really agree. I feel that lately kids are more focused on their phones and they've forgotten how to actually talk to people. And also, personally, I don't do the Snapchat streak thing because I could never get caught up in that. And I'm not against, like, someone texting someone while they're talking to someone because, like, I've had to do that. Like, while I'm talking to someone, my mom or my dad texted me to let me know something, so I had to text them back. And also, some people are able to I'd call it multitask like that. And personally, I'm more into actually interacting with people, even if it's like the randomest conversation ever.
When you're like, hanging out with someone and you're face-to-face communicating with them and they're on their phone talking to three different people, it's kind of hard because I'll ask them a question or I'll like say something back to them and they'll wait a couple of seconds and they'll just be looking down at their phone and going click, 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 and sending the same message to another five people. And then they go answer my question. It's kind of like a buffering situation there. Like it's less of, cause everybody is so, it's like their brain is constantly connected to their phone. So like every time they hear that ding, ding, boop, ding, or whatever sound it is, their attention immediately goes away from whatever they're focusing on to their phone. And I am guilty of this. I just try not to be, especially I had like the whole summer I didn't have my phone. I feel like that was really good for me because again, I broke it. And I feel like that was good for me because instead of looking down at my phone when I'm on a car ride, I can look out the window and see all the beautiful trees and the sunset. And instead of taking a picture of what I'm looking at, say I went hiking with my friends over earlier in the summer and they were all like, hold on, let me take a picture. And I just got to stare and actually take in the view and put it in my memory instead of my memories on Snapchat.
That's a pretty good comparison. And yeah, I'll admit I don't do that all the time either. Like, I won't always take a picture of something that I see, but if it's like something that's really, really nice, like I'll get it inside my mind first, then I'll snap a picture because, well, the thing what I do with my music is I like to make album covers for almost each song too. And I want something that fits the song title, not to mention the inspiration that came with it.
That's very cool.
Thank you.
Okay. So it used to be when I teach in the school, I've done it for 30 years, but 20 years ago, sometimes kids would say, I'm bored. And nobody had cell phones back then. And I've noticed that nobody looks very bored anymore. And this isn't just young people. I mean, you go to a doctor's office and all the old people now have cell phones. And, you know, when you're sitting in a doctor's office at the DMV or whatever, you know, some really thing where you just have to wait and normally you would be bored. Nobody is bored anymore. And I haven't heard the term in the classroom in a long time. I haven't heard anybody say I'm bored because there's this device that's always with you, that's always connected to these other things. So sometimes I think that those periods that we think of as bored are actually really creative periods because our brains aren't occupied. And so it's maybe floating around and can find new stuff in your consciousness. But what do you guys think about boredom? Do you hear that term anymore? And have you noticed that wherever you go, if people aren't doing something else, they tend to whip out a device and stay busy?
Well, I know someone like that. My best friend, whenever he's bored and thinks he has nothing to do, he whips out his phone and calls me. And yeah, there are times where when I'm bored, I'll want to talk to somebody too, but usually, like, what I'll want to do in my spare time is float around in my head. I try not to do it too much because, like Edgar Allan Poe said, basically, I went nuts from being in my head too much. But also, it helps me to be creative. I mean, I write poetry, I write raps, I write songs. So basically, that's a good thing to do in your spare time. It can help you be creative in many ways.
I do believe that the concept of boredom is kind of dying out, but it also is evolving. Because I often get bored with my phone. We are so preoccupied. If we're bored and we take out our phone, we become so preoccupied with just mindlessly scrolling through Instagram, looking at every meme that's been reshared thousands of times in the same video of some person cheating on another person that's on Instagram all the time. It gets boring. You're like, at least for me, I get bored with just seeing the same thing over and over again. But I've noticed patterns in what's been popular, and I'm bored with it. There's nothing new. Like, if me and my friends are hanging out and we're all sitting on our phones in my friend's living room, I'm bored. I want to interact. It's just when it's fine when I'm by myself and I can go off and explore the internet, because the internet is a great tool for that. There's constant information. There's an endless stream of information at your fingertips, and I think that's something we've never had before in the history of the world. But when you're actually like taking in what life has to give to you and you're constantly wrapped up in what has happened in the past or what other people did, then it gets boring because you're not actually experiencing that from yourself. So boredom is dying out in the way that we know it, but it is evolving into the mindlessness that we know now.
That is awesome.
I'm Eve Kreiling. I'm a sophomore at Laneville High School. Ta-da!
My name is Timothy Skaggs, and I'm a senior at Laneville High School.
What's the name of your band? If somebody wanted to see you on SoundCloud, where would they go?
Well, it's not a band. It's a basically solo project right now. Just it's under the name Tim Skaggs.
Spell it.
TimSkaggs.
And you have stuff that anybody could listen to up on SoundCloud.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's all instrumentals because I made them on a computer. I feel like a lot of people would like it as well.
Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can listen to more of Tim Skaggs' music at soundcloud.com.
My name's Karuna Gillespie, and I'm in 10th grade at Laneville High School.
My name's Natalia Taneo, and I'm in 10th grade in Laneville High School.
I'm Madison Watson, a junior at Laneville High School in Mendocino County, California.
I'd like you guys to talk about peace versus war. There's going to be an event next week at Willits High School. It's an evening of talking about peace, presentations and stuff like that. And I know from my experience in high school, we studied war a lot, but we never studied peace or efforts to make peace. And I want you to talk about what you think about that. Also, what is peace? I mean, there's a global scale. There's a local scale. There's within yourself. What is peace? What is war?
Fighting over things.
Like what?
Land or money.
Mostly money. Or things to make money. And peace is more like being in a certain state where you and others, or you and yourself, have a little, it's not quite agreement, but you're okay and an understanding with other people and yourself. But
you don't really feel the need for violence if you have peace.
You feel like you can get things without having to fight for them, or things that you need or want.
In paying attention to the media currently, do you think that the world has lots of wars going on and that it's something you don't need to deal with because you're young and because you're in an area that doesn't have a major war going on? There's a war on drugs. There's been a war on drugs here for 30 years. But other than that, you know, and there's arguments parcel to parcel, you know, between people, house to house. And then within the house, you know, people fight with their parents, parents fight with their kids, each other. Do you feel like you've been taught a lot about war in your education? And what's that led you to think about the state of the world?
Well, in history in school, we get taught a lot about wars. And it's mostly just like they give us one or two reasons why it started and then who won. It didn't really show much of the in-between parts, I guess. But there's a lot of them. And there's a lot going on right now. I mean, it doesn't happen, like, here, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't care.
Pay attention to it.
Still the world we're going to have to live in anyways. We should not care about it.
And I think social media is definitely a way for people to promote their own opinions or ideas about wars that are happening, and they get spread really easily on social media. And sometimes people's only way of knowing things about wars are just what other people's opinions are and not what's actually happening.
It's more difficult to figure out just straight facts rather than someone's opinion on the facts that they're hearing.
Do you guys ever fear that war would come to where you're living, or is that just, you know, doesn't seem even in the realm of possibility?
I think it's possible for a war to reach anywhere at some point. I don't think it's very likely that war will reach here, but I guess it's always possible that war could reach here we live.
It kind of depends on what you think war is, if it's just fighting or if it's, like, people, like, lined up against each other with guns and things like that.
Yeah. There's definitely fighting, but there's fighting everywhere, so it's not that much of a difference.
Do you ever feel like there's wars going on with inside yourself? Different ideas that you have, different emotional states that you get into that are conflicting? I mean, because basically war is conflict, right? And it's just the evolution of a conflict. So when internally you feel that, what methods do you use to get back to being peaceful?
I think almost all people have conflicts going on inside themselves and what to do about certain things or how to feel about certain things. And I think how most people solve it is finding some way to calm themselves or talk to someone to help figure out what's most important to them to know what to do about it.
Yep, I agree with her.
Talk about some specific techniques you use. I mean, I would think that, you know, listening to music is a way to avoid conflict because it puts you in this other state, reading a book, etc. Talk about that.
Yeah, I think listening to music is definitely a really major factor, especially for kids and teens who have a conflict with themselves. Listening to music that they can relate to definitely helps.
Or, like, playing music. Like, I like to, if I'm in conflict with myself, I could play music, and that's better.
Mm-hmm. Playing music.
You kind of get a focus on something. You have to focus on what you're doing instead of everything else that's happening. You get to, like, do one thing, and it's better than a bunch of things in your head.
Because sometimes stepping away from what you're conflicting yourself with and doing and, like, kind of distracting yourself, then when you come back to it, you may have a different opinion that could help you solve it better. Also, like, people play sports or, like, athletics. That's a pretty main way for people to relieve stress or conflict within themselves and other people. Or just, cardio and stuff.
Cardio.
Do you think that some of the people you're going to high school with will end up fighting in wars because of, you know, they'll join the military and fight in a war somewhere else?
I mean, I'm sure some people will. Not everyone. Our high school is kind of like, there's a lot of people that really don't like the military, and there's a lot of people that are really for the military, and there's some people who are in between, but no one ever really agrees on one thing. And there have been people at our high school that go into the military to fight wars or do stuff like that.
Yeah, there has been. I think there will be more, for sure, because probably when kids grow up around their parents telling them certain things about war and how, if it's, you know, good or bad or whatever that means, then the kids get a certain idea about whether or not they want to fight.
They want to feel like they're a part helping something, even if they're not 100% sure what they're helping. They want to feel important
and significant.
Well, I think especially in an area like this, it's an economic situation, too. I mean, because you can get out of high school and you could go to college and get really in debt and maybe not actually come up with a job at the end of it. Whereas if you join the military, like some people that I know from this high school recently joined the military, and, you know, you're set up for the next couple of years, and then there's college bill, you know, you can get free college after you've been in the military and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think that's a factor why people join the military. I don't think many people join the military going, I really want to go out and get in combat, you know. Mm-hmm. And talk a little bit more about, you know, how you resolve conflicts with other people and what works for you or what you've seen work for other people for resolving conflict.
I think it depends partly on me for the person. If I'm fighting with peers or friends, then I try to talk to them and, I don't know, understand they're coming from. But it's more with an adult, then I guess, I don't know. I don't know the differences, but I think it's just different depending on...
most of the fights people get in school is just difference of opinions. So there's not really going to be anyone who's going to win it. You just kind of have to, like, quit the fight and just come back to it later, I guess. They don't really fully resolve it. They just kind of realize that, like, no one's going to be right, so you might as well stop doing it.
So those two people that decide that they don't want to stop anyways, and then it gets worse and worse. Yeah. Yeah, I think most of the fights come from kids who don't agree, and I think, I don't think that most of it gets resolved. I think mostly they just move on because they don't want to acknowledge the fact that the people that they are spending their time with, they don't agree with. So they just kind of focus on other parts of their friendship or their...
Yeah, they just kind of choose to ignore that part of the person and focus on something else, I guess.
So they don't have to think about how they may actually not like some parts of the person. And then living a lie, basically.
Good old living lies.
I recall studying history in school being mostly the study of war. And I didn't really think that when I was in high school and grammar school. It didn't really occur to me that that's mainly what we were paying attention to. We were talking about the leaders and the cultural development also, but a lot of the things you had to memorize was this war happened from this year to that year, and this country got this land and that land, or Europeans came over and stole North America from people that were here, or, you know, back and forth, back and forth. And do you think it would make any sense to study in school movements and people that have created peace instead of war? And who do you know of that actually made peace rather than war on the planet?
Honestly, not that many people.
I think that we mostly study war because they say you learn history so that, you know, you won't repeat history. But I think if all you're teaching kids is ways they made war, then they're only going to learn how to make war. And if they taught kids on how things were resolved more or how peace was happened, then it would be more in their brains about how to do that.
Yeah, and like in elementary school, they teach you about resolving conflicts. You have to talk about how you feel when someone says something or like how that made you feel, and then you both have to apologize and then you just kind of move on. But real conflicts are almost never like that.
Not that simple.
And especially in wars, I understand why someone would teach kids about wars, because you need to realize like why they happened and like what happened and like how something was made or how something happened. But also, wars never really have like a peaceful ending. It's always just someone gets conquered and then the other one wins.
Or it's like, oh, they signed this piece of paper and then, you know, everyone's good. But
then everyone's kind of just on their toes waiting for the next person to do something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no one
really finds peace after war, anything. So there's not... If someone's saying they're going to war for peace, it's probably not going to happen. You don't make peace out of violence.
Kind of conflicts itself.
Yeah.
But that is kind of what people say most of the time, right?
Mm-hmm. I think there are ways to try and spread peace without causing war. I think just the idea of not going to war spreads peace in general. So the idea of I'm going to war to spread peace doesn't make much sense.
Especially if half the time a lot of people don't really fully understand why they're going to war.
Yeah. It's mostly what they see on social media, again, from their parents. It's hard to know why or what you're doing.
You don't feel a lot of fear about war coming or, you know... Are you paying attention to the conflicts with North Korea and the conflicts in the Middle East and terrorist attacks and stuff like that? And if you are, if you're aware of that stuff, do you think that we use fear as a way of controlling people? Do we allow the media to create a fearful population that will then go along with whatever somebody else says.
Well, the thing with fear is it doesn't really get you anywhere. If you're going to be scared of something, you're not going to think about how to make it better. You're just going to think about how to protect yourself. You're not going
to... Or how to get away from it.
Yeah, you're just kind of trying to avoid it if you're scared of it. So there's not much of a point in just being scared the entire time.
I think fear is definitely the main way to get people to do things that they want or not do things that they want. I think it's really hard not to pay attention to what's going on in the world because the media is constantly talking about it and sometimes even making it seem that it's something when it's not. So it's hard to not know about what's going on because it's constantly just happening and blowing up on social media. I think on a day-to-day basis, we don't have fear about things like that happening here, but if we really thought about it and maybe in the future something could happen, people might be a little more afraid, but because it just doesn't happen here right now, we assume it won't later on, so we don't have fear as much, which means we don't do anything about it.
Yeah, and also another part is if it's not happening directly to you, people find it difficult to care. Mm-hmm. So, like, if people are getting bombed a bunch somewhere else, they're not going to care as much as if they got bombed in a city next to them because they're not close to them, so they don't feel the same way. So it's difficult for people to feel sympathy for another country or another place when they don't
relate.
Yeah, they don't learn anything about them because you learn something about them, then you might actually feel sympathy.
Because here, everyone makes jokes about terrible things that happen in the world because they don't happen to us, so
why should we have to care?
We assume that it's more of like not reality.
Or just like things that happened in the past. If they happened in the past, then why should you care?
Yeah, we consider it definitely less of a reality. And in some ways, it's just kind of, it's instead of like something that's happening right now, it's something that's happening right now somewhere else. So it's not considered as important or anything.
Yeah. And if you're, like, fearing, if one group of people did one thing, then the media or something will make it seem like every single person of, like, say, like, Muslims, if Muslims did some terrorist act, then everyone's going to assume that everyone does that. And they're going to be scared of every single one of them.
Because, again, social media just kind of blows everything up.
Do you think that part of why we have wars is for economics, that we want to create weapons and sell weapons to countries, and that that's a big factor in why there's so many wars in the world?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, no, yes, for sure.
Honestly, like, we get taught a lot about wars, but we don't really... It's more like wars in the past than wars right now, so I don't really know tons about wars that have happened like recently or that are kind of happening right now, because they don't really teach you much about what's happening now.
And if we do hear the facts, you don't know if they're real because, again, social media.
Have you read any books about war that changed your thinking about war?
I've read a lot of books that contain wars in them, of course, because that's a pretty main point of people find it interesting to read about wars. But again, I think that even books sometimes tend to focus on so much war and that not as much peace, but
did you guys read 1984?
No, we read Fahrenheit 50. We read his other book, but
Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah,
we read that, but we didn't read his other book.
So is there anybody historically you can think of that is treated and respected as a peacemaker or somebody that worked to stop wars?
Martin Luther King. I know, the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah, me too. First one that pops in my head.
Or, like, Gandhi.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think a lot of people know more people that create war than peace because
it's more exciting.
It causes more fear.
Can you talk about Gandhi or Martin Luther King a little bit?
Even then, like, we don't learn that much about them. I mean, they, you know, they say, oh, they did this really great thing and they're really important, but we don't learn much in school, at least, about what they did exactly or why they did it or their past, because they're more focused on learning about the conflicts that happened before or after it.
Yeah. Would you want to learn more about peace as time goes on?
I think for sure, because then it teaches us ways to spread more peace. If we learn more about how other people did it and it worked, then we'll know how to do it.
Okay, you talked about social media bringing information about wars and peace. And can you describe exactly what you mean by that? I mean, what do you see on social media that's about war or peace? And has any of it really stuck in your head as an important thing?
I mean, news always follows into, like, social media, like Instagram and Twitter and a bunch of stuff like that. So it's like you get to know, you know what's happening, but it's also getting processed through the people that have, like, the account or the page, so they always have their own opinion, so they're going to show it to you how they see it. So it's, you're getting the information, yeah, but you're getting it filtered through what they think of the information.
Yeah, so if you saw, like, oh, you know, this protest happened or something, and then, but you don't really know what information's real, or if it was just made a lot bigger deal than it was, and sometimes it's hard to really know what.
You have to go through a lot of different sources to really
understand what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what sources do you guys use? It's just basically social media.
I mean, sometimes if we see something that really terrible happened or something on a Snapchat story or something like that, or on Instagram, then we'll look up and try to find something, but usually it leads just right back to whatever social media we saw it on, or sometimes it's hard to find what you might really think is true or not, but...
Have you seen any movies that influenced how you felt about war? TV shows?
There's tons of movies and TV shows with war in them, but they didn't necessarily, like, influence what I thought about them, about war, really.
Sometimes it makes you see a different side of the story of the war, but it won't necessarily change someone's opinion.
Or it could, like, maybe show, like, more graphically what happens to, like, people that aren't necessarily fighting the war. Like, if, like, someone's getting bombed, it'd show, like, in the movie, it could show, like, innocent people that got caught in it, too. So that might help you realize it's not just the bad people that are getting killed. It's kind of everyone mm-hmm. around them, too. So that, I've seen, like, movies and stuff that show, like, I don't know, innocent people dying and stuff, which is kind of dark, but, like, I've seen that.
Yeah.
And that might have influenced, yeah, that probably influenced me a bit.
Yeah, I think everything that we see about war influences a little bit, but I don't think not enough to completely change someone's opinion about it.
Have you ever heard of nonviolence training? And if you have, what do you know about it?
I have not heard of that before. Is it just, like, training to, like, do things nonviolently?
I mean, I assume that's what it is, but I don't know tons.
Well, normally what it is a training. If people are going to protest something and they think that there's going to be a reaction, either from people that disagree with them or police that are, you know, there to protect the statues or the whatever, you know, the keep the roads open. So people learn techniques for nonviolence so that they won't react to being yelled at or hit or pushed like that. So you don't know.
I've definitely seen, like, I understand, like,
nonviolence for sure.
It's definitely, like, if I've seen, like, a video of a protest, I've seen, like, evidence of that happening. Like, someone getting, like, something violent happening to them and them not reacting just for the sake of not being
caught up in all of the conflict.
Yeah.
Trying to solve
makes
things.
Sense. I've probably heard something like that, just, like, not reacting in a violent way. Especially, like, nonviolent protests. Like, you don't want to... Especially, like, if it's a violent protest, no one's going to really... I mean, they'll pay attention, but it's mostly, like, they're paying attention to the people, not the reason why the people are doing it. They're paying attention to the destruction they're making. And, like, if they're doing it for peace, then it's the same thing as starting a war for peace. You're just doing it in a way that makes people think of you as bad people, which will make them think of the cause as a bad thing.
Bad thing. So, yeah.
Kind of reverses what the point is of what you're doing.
Does a lot of that depend on how the media portrays, you know, the slant, the perspective that you see? And also, you know, since Facebook and you guys probably don't use Facebook much, right? Now, Facebook is for these old people. I know. It's so weird. 10 years ago, it was cutting edge to be on Facebook. But Facebook shapes the stories you get to see based on what you like. Every time you make a reaction, every time you make a reaction on Facebook, it creates a personality for you. And then you are, therefore, only seeing certain kinds of stories and reactions. So do you trust what the media portrays about, let's say, the Charlottesville stuff? You know about that, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The demonstrations that ended up, you know, being this conflict and a person getting killed and like that.
After the Charlottesville happened, everybody was posting, like, so many things about, like, Nazis and, like, all around that stuff. Not just the rallies that have been happening, but that, like, the groups that have come from it and, like, it's opened so many more people up to thinking that it's okay, you know, because there's so much attention on it that it's, like, not as frowned upon or, like, it's more out there than it was before.
It's not as crazy of an idea anymore. People are starting to think of it as a more, like, a more normal thing, I guess.
Because, like, there's been, like, actual rallies about it. So
yeah.
It's like,
before people were thought, like, that's crazy. No one would ever do something like that. But now that people are doing it, they're like, oh, like, they're starting to realize, like, that things like that actually happen.
Are you referring to the person getting killed? Are you referring to the fact that Nazis are marching in the streets?
The Nazis
marching in the street.
Do you guys know that that's totally illegal in Europe? And if you even tried that, you'd be arrested?
What, like marching for a hate organization?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
So, one question.
I don't know how it's legal here, because, like, isn't it?
Free speech.
Right, but
this is important.
There was Gandhi.
That's what we
number
said.
One. There was Martin Luther King,
yep.
Followed Gandhi. Martin Luther King Jr. And there's lots of people who were like on anti-slavery thing, and they mostly did nonviolence, like Frederick Douglass and Malcolm X, him.
Do you think there's enough in your education about people that have tried to create peace in proportion to people that have created war?
Oh, no way. Our textbooks are filled with, like, people who have gone through war and how it's worked and how it hasn't. And there's been, like, short little paragraphs about, oh, this guy preached nonviolence, but then it goes back to, well, they did a war anyway, so, like, it doesn't say most of the tactics. Like, I bet there's been a lot more instances where people have used nonviolence to try to make a point, and that it's ended up in violence anyway, so it's not, like, shown as much, or it hasn't.
Can you name a couple of historical events like that?
I mean, we haven't been taught a lot. The big one is Martin Luther King, when he did his, like, I Have a Dream speech and everything.
And then what happened?
And then everybody gathered, and it was, like, more protests started happening. And, oh, there was Rosa Parks. She used nonviolence. She used boycotting. So boycotting is another instance of nonviolent tactics.
What happened to Martin Luther King?
Oh, he got shot. Yeah, so most people who have spoken on nonviolence are, like, don't want to, like, fight back. They just want to say what they believe in. Yeah, they just want to create peace. They're usually killed because people don't like their ideas and just want to fight and only want conflict or don't agree with them. And so they think that if they get their ideas out, then what they believe in isn't gonna end up happening in the future.
A lot of things about, like, learning about violence, more people tend to pay attention to violence more just because it's, people find it a lot more exciting than peace. They think it's, like, there's more stuff to pay attention to. Because peace is like, what, everyone's okay? No, that's not fun. And then there's
and
the war.
And nobody believes that it's actually going to work. Nobody thinks that you can just talk it out and come to a conclusion. Like,
yeah.
Most people in history think if we don't kill these people, then, like, we're never going to get anywhere. We're just going to continue arguing. Because we're never going to agree. So how would talking about it work?
Yeah, I can just imagine. I mean, you have action films, and then you could have peace films, you know, where people are just being peaceful and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, our society is so geared toward the adrenaline rush of action and war and violence and stuff like that. And then we have sports that are really specifically just violence,
yeah,
you know.
Football.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, at least they're throwing balls and running and stuff. I like boxing. I mean, it was just this big, huge boxing match, and I was...
Literally, you're just watching two people hit each other back and forth. And
then you get paid.
Yeah. I bet they get paid a lot more than, like, counselors and teachers, too.
That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out.
Landfill Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project is proud to support this month's Youth Speaks Out. Our Environmental Prevention Strategies in the Community, also known as EPIC, is a project funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Through our organization and coalition, we are working towards reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laytonville community. If you are interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Laytonville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email jama@laytonville.org.
Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project or get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio.
The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those on KZYX. They are the views of those who express them.
You can listen to more of Tim Skaggs' music at soundcloud.com.